So one night, as supper is wrapping up, a lady decides to do something so radically generous that people have been talking about her for 2,000 years. Kind of reminds me of when President Bush went to visit a nursing home once, just to say hello to the people there. He was walking around talking to all the senior citizens at the nursing home. They were saying, hello, Mr. President. Hello, Mr. Bush. How are you doing? You're shaking people's hands. They were exchanging pleasantries, just being nice to the old people there. But in one particular conversation, it became more and more apparent to him that the old lady didn't recognize him. And after talking for a while, the president said, ma'am, do you know who I am? And the elderly lady said, no, I'm sorry, I don't. But if you'll ask at the desk, they'll tell you. We'd all like to be known, to be recognized, to be remembered. It's cool when you meet people and you leave good enough impressions on them that they know your name later. But how about doing something that will still be talked about 2,000 years from today? That's what Jesus said would happen at this dinner party that he was at a week before he died. Here's how John records the moment. In John chapter 12, verse 1, it says, 6 days before Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Passover was the biggest Jewish holiday. Passover was like, for them, it was like Christmas for us. People would always complain that other people were putting up Passover decorations on their house and playing Passover music on the radio way too early. They said, it's getting so commercialized, Passover. But the tradition was that Jewish people from all over the world would, at least once in their life, travel to Jerusalem for Passover. They would have up to 3 million people in Jerusalem there for Passover. And even though there was a warrant out for Jesus' arrest in Jerusalem, Jesus shows up in Bethany, which is a suburb of Jerusalem, a couple miles outside. And from the other Gospels, we know that he goes to a dinner that Simon hosts. Simon was a common name back then. Two out of the 12 disciples are named Simon. There are 10 Simons mentioned in the New Testament, very common name, but this was Simon the leper. Simon, who used to have leprosy. Simon, who used to have to stay 100 feet away from everyone and yell out if anybody got too close, including his family, because of his contagious disease. That Simon is now hosting a dinner party in his house with lots of guests sitting at his table, talking, laughing, eating, not getting infected, because Jesus had touched Simon and made the leprosy vanish. And as great as Simon's story was, he was only the second most amazing person sitting at the table, because also sitting there was Lazarus. And while Simon had come from a leper's colony, Lazarus had come from a cemetery. Don't get me wrong, leprosy was a death sentence. You would eventually die once you got leprosy. But Lazarus had actually already been dead. And yet there he is, sitting at the table, talking, laughing, eating cake, not being dead. Jesus had made Simon's disfigurement disappear. Jesus had made Lazarus's aliveness reappear. He had given Simon a chance to do life again. He had given Lazarus life again, which explains why Lazarus's older sister, Martha, was serving that night. And when somebody does something really good for you, you just want to honor them, right? Linda and I were having a really rough night recently. Just a whole bunch of stuff didn't go well during that day. It was just a bad day. And as we're driving around at the end of the day, we decided we would go to McDonald's for some vanilla ice cream cones, because with the app, you can get them for half price. But when we got there, my app wasn't working. I told you, it was not a very good day. So we ordered Linda's at half price and mine at full price, fine. We drove up to the window, we were waiting there, when the McDonald's worker opened up the window and she said, ice cream cones, right? And I said, right. She said, so we just made two chocolate milkshakes by mistake. Would you take them? And I said, sure, how much? She said, what do you mean? I said, well, we paid for ice cream, how much to upgrade to milkshakes? She said, oh, no, I'll give them to you for free. I said, for free? She said, they're on me. And that was such a surprise and such a blessing from heaven that night, and so nice of that girl, that Linda and I are considering naming our next child after her. Can you imagine Martha's gratitude when, after a funeral and 4 days of grieving, Jesus comes along and says, oh, no, I will give you your brother back for free. And he does. And then Martha gets a chance to cook for Jesus. I mean, how good must have that meal been? She probably made chocolate milkshakes for him for dessert, and they hadn't even been invented yet. We don't know what was on the menu that night, but we do know what happened that night. Lazarus's other sister, Mary, decided that she also wanted to say thank you to Jesus. In verse 3, it says, "Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet. And she wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume." And we think, weird, right? Pouring perfume on someone's feet, isn't that just kind of yucky? So in our part of, in our day, in our part of the world, most people shower daily, regularly. We have Irish Spring and Axe body wash and Sure deodorant and hand sanitizers and Listerine and Febreze when it's really bad. In our day, in our world, we spend a lot of time and effort on not smelling bad. Not so much in other times in other parts of the world. Queen Isabella only took 2 baths in her life. The day before her wedding, she took her first bath, and I'm sure the king appreciated that. The day before she died, she took her second and only other bath, and I'm not sure who that helped. Cleanliness in Spain in the 1500s was not like what we do. But in Jesus' day, to honor someone, they would anoint persons with oil. When they were coronating kings, when they were ordaining priests, when they were commissioning prophets, when they were honoring rabbis, they would pour oil of olay on the person's head. When people were sick, or when people got well and were ready to re-enter the workforce, they would pour oil on themselves. When people wanted to look good for a date or to go out in public, they would oil down their hair. They were styling. Jewish people would pour oil over lots of people's heads for various reasons. And in their culture, when people stopped by your house, walking to your house on dusty, muddy, nasty roads, it was polite to have a servant or a child wash the feet of each guest as they came into your house. If it was a very special guest, you wouldn't just use water, you might use some lotion too. So this is not really weird, it's just a different way of dealing with the wear and tear of life in that country. So after dinner that night, Lazarus' sister Mary really wanted to thank Jesus for bringing her brother back to life. So she broke out a crazy expensive bottle of perfume called spikenard, nard. Linda and I were walking around a high-end store once. I have no idea why we were in there. And we walked past a perfume section, and I looked, and I saw this one tiny bottle of perfume that cost $1,200. And I said, "For real? $1,200? And the guy behind the counter said, "Oh, it's very fine stuff." And I thought, dude, I regularly buy cars for less than that bottle of stinky water. I looked up the most expensive eau de pew out there right now, and you can get some Arabian stuff for $3,000 an ounce if you want to. Mary had many ounces, like 2 school lunch milk cartons full of this stuff. And it didn't come in a cardboard container, it came in packaged, it was packaged in a jar, and she broke the jar open and poured it on Jesus. Other gospel writers say Mary first poured it on Jesus' head, and then John adds that she poured it on Jesus' feet as well. She was probably just planning on pouring it on his head, but she had so much, she had extra, so she poured it on his feet. But she hadn't planned on that, so she hadn't brought towels to wipe his feet, so she used her hair to wipe his feet. All of which seems kind of excessive, except that Lazarus, her brother, her alive brother, her not dead anymore brother, is sitting across the table watching all this. And Mary cannot get over that Jesus gave their dead brother back to them. I don't know if you've ever lost someone in life that you care about. I don't mean GPS lost. I mean like they were part of your family, your life. You love them. They love you. They're part. And then they get confused. They get tricked. They get messed up. Maybe they have an affair. Maybe they get addicted to something and you lose them. And they're still out there somewhere and you try to get them back, but you can't. And there's a huge hole in your heart where they used to be. I don't know if you've ever lost someone like that. Probably there was a spouse or a child or a parent or a good friend. We've got some families who are going through all of that right now. We always do. Losing people to the evil one is devastating. But if you get them back, if they come back, if somehow they repent, they rethink, they reverse course, they return, if you get the person that you love back, it's like better than baklava. Reconciling with an estranged sibling, a straying child who comes home, really good friends who are your friends again. Reunion is a wonderful thing. And Mary felt a huge desire to thank Jesus for bringing their brother back to them. And to express her gratitude, she gave Jesus the very best gift that she could, that she had at her disposal. From her point of view, all she was doing that night was saying, "Thank you, thank you, thank you" to the one who had changed everything for them. From the perspective of those who were watching, though, It looked like a huge waste. In John chapter 12, it says, one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. And he wasn't wrong. Mary had a bottle of oil that was worth $30,000. Don't know how she got it. It was worth that much because it was made from flowers in the Himalaya Mountains in India. How did she get that? Maybe Mary went on a trip to Nepal once. Maybe she ordered it on Amazon. Maybe it was given to her. Maybe she was saving it for a funeral in their family. We do not know what her plan was. But when she just so cavalierly uses this for such an ordinary purpose, it seems so wasteful. To give a thank you gift is fine and all, but to waste a year's salary for 2 minutes of smell, that's what Judas said. That's stupid. And the other guys agreed and joined in the criticism. You know what's really easy to do in life? To judge other people harshly on how they use their money. So you watch people, you think you know them, you see how they spend their money, and sometimes, somehow, you think you can determine what is good and what is wasteful for that person. That's crazy, people. You don't know their story, you don't know their opportunities, their responsibilities, you don't know their resources, you don't know their passions, you don't know their generosity. You can't tell by looking from the outside what's going on in their hearts. May I suggest, if you think it's a good idea for people to judge other people's spending, perhaps start by inviting four people that you really respect over to your house this week. And sit down at a table with them and go over with them your financials line by line. And then when you've laid everything in your life bare, ask them to comment on how they think you're doing. Knowing all the resources that God's giving you and how you're using them, ask their opinion of how you're doing. That's what Christians did in the 1700s, just to be sure that they weren't blind to their own greed. But if you'd rather not do that, okay, let's just be careful of judging other people on partial knowledge, right? Judas said, oh, Mary, I can't believe you're throwing money away like that. And all the other guys went, yeah, what he said. But then John adds a footnote here. They didn't know this at the time, but later on they found out Judas's deal. In verse 6 it says, Judas did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put in it. Do you know the story of Jose Rivera? He was a famous Mexican outlaw. He robbed Texas trains and banks all the time, and nobody could ever catch him. Jose Rivera was known to have a buried treasure worth a fortune somewhere. So finally, a posse tracks him down in southern Mexico in a town somewhere, and they went into this saloon, and they said, okay, we're here, and we're looking for Jose Rivera. Who is he? And one young man said, I know how to speak English, and the fat man you're looking for is snoring over in the corner. And a guy from the posse woke him up and said, where's all the loot? And Jose Rivera smiled and said, no English. So the posse leader got the young interpreter to come over and he said, you tell Jose Rivera that if he gives us the information about where the money is, we'll let him go. But if he doesn't tell us where the money is buried, he is a dead man. And the interpreter conveyed that message to Jose Rivera in Spanish, and Jose replied in Spanish, no, I don't want to die. No, I don't care about the money anymore. I just want to live out my life in peace. He said, head out of town for a mile, find a large tree on the right, go down the hill to a well next to a big white rock. All of the money that I have stolen is buried right behind that rock. And he said all that in Spanish. And when he finished, the posse guy said, so what is Jose's decision? And the interpreter shook his head. He said, Jose Rivera is a very brave man, and he says he will never tell you where he buried the money. So it looks like Judas was honorably defending the poor from Mary's wastefulness, right? But all he was really doing was lining his own pockets. So from Judas's point of view, Mary is blowing a wad of money that could be better spent by him. From the disciples' point of view, Mary is not honoring God properly with her resources. What's wrong with her? From Mary's point of view, she is just expressing her heartfelt indebtedness to Jesus. But what Jesus sees in this act, as is his wont, is way different from what everybody else sees. In verse 7, Jesus replies, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have poor among you, but you will not always have me. And they said, and we say, what? It was intended for what? I mean, right, they would pour perfume on people's bodies as they prepared them for burial, right? But how in the world did Jesus get to the idea that this was for his burial? Mark's record says that Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial." So Jesus agrees with Judas that we are responsible for helping people who need help. But Jesus also knows that there will always be people to help if you want to help. But his time here was short. He is at the end. There's a warrant out for his arrest. The final showdown is near. And Jesus can't stop thinking about how that's going to go because that's why he came. Mary was just trying to say thank you to him by literally pouring out her very best for him, which is why he defended her. He said, "She did a beautiful thing." And when, out of gratitude, you do what you can for Jesus, he sees that as a beautiful thing. But from Jesus's point of view, this anointing, and actually everything else, is always about his death, burial, and resurrection. So as Mary was pouring out the oil on him, she's thinking, party. And Jesus is thinking, funeral. Which strangely somehow goes together. You cannot get to rejoicing in a broken world unless somebody is willing to pay the price to repair what's broken. Like death, especially death. Lazarus has died, and he was brought back, and that's great. But in order for that to happen, Jesus had to abandon his favored place next to his father and come live in this mess with us so that he could die in our place and fix death. We're not trying to trick you. It is tough to help God put pieces back together. It costs. It costs to do what God asks us to do. And I don't just mean money, but I don't not mean money either. It costs bucks to help poor people. It takes dollars to help the lost people be found. It takes guts to get the word out. It takes patience to listen to people who are just lonely. It requires effort to teach your kids the truth. It's hard to stand up to evil. But that's what must happen if we're going to help the world be made right again. And the good part is that along the way, our Father in heaven is so encouraging. He is thankful when we do what he wants us to do, and he gives us stuff. One author I was reading this week described how he thinks this whole oil thing played out. May I read to you two really good paragraphs of what Jesus might have been thinking while this happened? I may? Okay, thank you. This might be how Jesus would explain that whole deal. Jesus speaking, 6 days before my final Passover, my Father sent me a sign that the time was very near. It was one of the nicest things anyone ever did for me. It was on the Friday night before Palm Sunday. My death was very much on my mind. It had been a very hot day. All of us were tired and needed a bath. We all smelled a little back then. Lazarus and his sisters and the disciples and I were having supper nearby in the home of a man I had healed known as Simon the leper. And at the end of the meal, Lazarus's sister Mary got up and walked over to me carrying a large bottle of perfume. She began to pour it on my head. It was tremendously refreshing. I knew it was an enormous sacrifice for her financially. It was worth a year's wages. But it was also an encouraging message from my father. Through Mary and her deed, my father was saying, "I know the cost and I honor you." It was a symbolic anointing for my impending burial. Jesus said, "At the same time the cool oil was covering me, I looked at Lazarus, the man I had raised from the dead. My father was also saying to me, 'You will be back from the grave. Look in the mirror. See Lazarus.' I looked at the other end of the table, and there was Simon, and one of the most deformed lepers I'd ever seen. Simon's face had at one time been so offensive, most people couldn't even look at him. From Isaiah, I knew my face would be so distorted by my persecutors, no one would be able to look at me. Once again, my father was telling me, 'Look in the mirror. See Simon's face now. Your face soon will be healed. The damage won't last long.' My father was telling me I could handle my two biggest obstacles, bodily damage and death. My father always found the most touching ways of reaching me." That's all from a book by A.J. Hodges called Jesus and an Interview Across Time, which before the Chosen TV series came out, was my favorite theatrical presentation of Jesus ever. I don't know if Jesus was really thinking all that or not. He could have been. But it does seem that God left notes around at just the right time to encourage Jesus through some of the hardest parts, right? Like, why did Waldo always wear a striped shirt? Because he didn't want to be spotted. But it seems like God did stuff to be spotted by his son as his son headed towards his death. Like when Jesus was on trial and it hurt physically and it hurt mentally and he had to be tempted to just end it all and saying, I'm done here, and ascended into heaven. But in the middle of that, he hears Pilate's wife say that she had a dream, and she tells her husband, leave this innocent man alone. And then Jesus' life gets traded for a guy who was scheduled to die, a guy in prison. And the guy who was released, his name means Son of the Father. And Jesus traded his life for the Son of the Father. And Pilate posts a sign in three different languages over Jesus' head that says, Jesus, King of the Jews. And the thief, one cross over, somehow bets that Jesus is still going to be doing business later, even though he's on a cross dying. And then darkness appears from nowhere and covers up Jesus' embarrassing situation for 3 hours. And then a Roman soldier who's standing underneath him, who is tasked with killing him, ends up announcing he is the Son of God. Those are some pretty good extra things that God threw in just to let Jesus know, even in the midst of the end of it being really bad, that Jesus was right on track. And what I've seen is that our Father in heaven is still thoughtful with us like that. When people following Jesus hit rough patches, God will often send messengers or messages to assure us that he's still with us. My mom needed cream rubbed on her broken back several times a day this week. And she hates asking me for help all the time. But she has friends who are willing to help, but she hates to ask them to come all the way over to help her, especially in the morning. She doesn't want to invite anybody over in the morning to apply the ointment to her. So she didn't. But then one of mom's friends got a job helping a child get on the bus each morning a couple of streets down from where mom lives. And I said, oh, how lucky. How about a lady in our congregation threw a car seat in the back of her car because she was going to get her grandchild later. And later that same day, she sees a lady walking down the road with a toddler. And she stops and asks if they needed a ride. And the lady said, well, thanks, but you have to have a car seat. And the lady in our congregation said, right, I just happen to have one in my back seat. And she said later, it's so cool that God would know what I needed before I even did it. She said, it really made me feel like God can do stuff with my life. How about when I stink up a sermon? Like I stink up the joint as bad as it can be, and on my way home I'm screaming and yelling about how stinky I am. And then later, that day I get a text that says, hey John, what you said today made me think of something different that a way I've never thought of before. Or I get a text that says, I used something that you said in the sermon today when I was talking to somebody else and it really helped. Or I get a text that say, your jokes are like Wagner's operas. They're not nearly as bad as they sound. Or I get a phone call later that day that says, okay, I think I'm ready to be baptized now. I think it's so cool that God is with us and that he often lets us know that if we have eyes to see. When Matthew records what was happening at Simon's dinner party, he says, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Jesus predicted that Mary's act would be known all over the world for all time. Something Mary did that night, just because she wanted to say thank you, would be talked about all over the world for all time. And sure enough, it's getting talked about in Victor, New York in AD 2023. Here are three things I think we can learn from Mary's outrageous generosity. Number one, if Jesus bring someone in your life back from the dead, extreme generosity is not an inappropriate response. In fact, it's kind of normal to want to be giving when you realize Jesus brought somebody back from the dead. Some things are not hard to explain. Like the guy whose landlord wanted to talk to him about his super high heating bill. And the guy said, my door is always open. If someone in your family goes through cancer and lives, if someone in your family gets sober, gets clean, comes home, if someone in your family goes from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of God, I'm not saying you have to give an offering equal to a year's salary, but don't you want to? I mean, he brought the person you love back. Seems like Mary's act of giving gives us permission to be radical in our giving. Number two, when someone in your life comes back from the dead, the thrill you feel is a reflection of the thrill Jesus feels, because that's what he came to make happen. That's what he lives for, literally. Do you remember Jesus saying, in the same way, I tell you, There is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Jesus said when somebody comes back, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God. And I always read that to mean that the angels were rejoicing when anybody chooses to follow Jesus. But it doesn't say the angels rejoice. It says there is rejoicing in the angels' presence. And who is it that the angels are in the presence of? That's right. God is the one who's rejoicing, and the angels watch him do that. When someone's confidence in Jesus grows to the point of they want to connect with him in his death, burial, and resurrection, to the point of bringing them back from the dead, we are not the only ones singing. Last point. If you are thankful for what you have from him, if you are thankful for what you have from Jesus, it will show up in generosity. If you are not living generously, something's probably blocking your thankfulness. We got our chocolate milkshakes that night, and then a different girl opened up the window and she handed me 2 vanilla ice cream cones. And she smiled and she said, "Here you go, 2 vanilla cones made with love." I said, "Made with love?" She said, "Yes, they were, those 2 cones made with love. I hope you have a very fine night." And we did. Those 2 girls at McDonald's totally turned our not very great night around. They didn't have to. They could have opened up the window and handed stuff out. Close the window like it usually goes. But they didn't. They were both really generous. And we were thankful. And that was just ice cream. Martha is thankful for her brother's life. And she gave a great gift. One writer said, "The house was filled with the odor of the perfume, and the whole world with the aroma of her love." Are you thankful? What are you thankful for? Have you been given something by God? What might you give to God? Thanks. Giving. When life is done right, they always go together. Let's pray.